Welcome to Homeschool Companion, your source for information, motivation, and inspiration. If you're part of the homeschool community or simply interested in learning more about home-based education, stay tuned. Together we'll examine the latest resources, learning styles, and teaching techniques. We'll speak with experts in the field to help you uncover every homeschool advantage. We'll also present suggestions on how to keep Christ in the curriculum as we explore fresh ways to teach and learn. Here's your Homeschool Companion host, author, educator, and children's ministry specialist, Dr. Rose Gamblin.
Welcome, welcome. I'm Rose.
And I'm Kathy.
It's been a long time, Kathy, since you've been on the show with us.
It has.
And we have our story for the kids. We're going to start out with that, and it's called The Big Oops by Karen Tronkel. Here we go. At my school, kids had no respect for each other. If they heard something that someone didn't want people to know, they'd tell everyone. But I'm ashamed to say that I used to talk about other kids, too. Why? Because that's what everybody did. Until Julia showed up. Julia arrived at our school toward the end of the fifth grade. I liked her from the first day I met her. There really wasn't anything about her not to like. She wasn't exactly pretty, but she was kind of cute. One day she invited me to her house after school. I told her I'd ask my mom at lunch, since I lived around the corner from the school and always went home to eat.
What'd your mom say?
She asked when she saw me later. I gave her the thumbs up signal.
Great! I'll meet you at your locker after school.
The last bell rang. I walked past the girls' restroom on the way to my locker. I paused for a second. I needed to use it, but I hated to go in there. It was always filthy. I don't know why some girls thought it was funny to trash up the bathroom. That was one of the reasons I always went home for lunch, so I walked on by.
Let's go!
Is your house very far, I asked?
No, it's not far at all.
That was the day I learned that not everyone sees things the same way. To me, a house that was not far at all was like my house, right around the corner. To Julia, a house that was several long blocks away was not far at all, because she had once lived in a house that was more than a mile away from her school. The afternoon sun beat down on us as we walked and talked. Where do you get your clothes? I asked. You always look great.
At the thrift store.
She answered as if there was nothing wrong with it. Oh, no, I thought. If the kids at school find out where she gets her clothing, they'll really tease her. I wanted to tell her never to mention that to anyone else, but I didn't. Soon I began to wish I'd used the girls' restroom. I really had to go. Every time we came to another street, I hoped it was Julia's, but we kept walking and walking and walking. I became more and more uncomfortable. I had to get into the bathroom soon. Finally, she turned down a street. Is this your street? I asked, hopefully.
That's my house. Dad must not be home yet. I don't see his car.
I turned toward the door, but Julia called out.
It'll be locked. We'll have to wait in the backyard.
She walked to the side gate. Oh, no. I had to get in now. I followed her to the backyard.
This happens a lot. Dad tries to be here when I get home, but he's a youth pastor and has a lot to do. So sometimes he's late. He'll be here soon.
She kicked off her shoes and picked up the end of the hose.
It sure is hot. Let's cool off our feet.
She turned on the water. That did it. I couldn't hold it any longer. A warm, wet trickle ran down my pant legs. A wet stain spread out across the patio cement. I turned bright red. This couldn't be happening to me. My girl's age did not wet their pants. I wanted the ground to open up and swallow me so I could disappear. I scrunched up my face and I tried not to cry. Julia's eyes grew big. She looked at the stain and back up at me. Her hand flew up to her mouth. Then suddenly she turned the hose on herself. Soon she was dripping with water.
Your turn,
she said, pointing the hose at me. She sprayed me until I was soaking wet, and then she sprayed off the sidewalk, too. Just then a car pulled into the driveway. Her dad went through the house and unlocked the door.
I'm sorry I wasn't here when you got home,
he said.
Hey, that's a great way to cool off. Dad, this is my friend Karen,
said Julia.
I'm glad to meet you,
he said, smiling. I don't remember much of what happened to the rest of the afternoon. What worried me was that she'd invited Julia. I knew what happened at sleepovers. Kids talked about other kids. Julia would talk about me. She'd tell them what had happened. What was I going to do? By Monday, I was a nervous wreck. I walked slowly into class. I felt as if I were wearing a big sign that read, "I wet my pants." But Julia just smiled when I walked in. Nobody looked at me funny, and nothing happened the rest of the day. I realized that Julia hadn't said anything to anybody. I was safe. By the end of the year, Julia was one of my best friends. She never, ever mentioned what had happened, even to me. When she discovered that my family didn't go to church, she invited me to hers, and I began to learn about Jesus. Much later, I realized that Julia was living her life the way Jesus wanted her to, by being good and kind. Well, I want to take you now to into an interview that I had with Christy Gillen-Byrne. I am here with Christy Gillen-Byrne, and she is the Associate Director of Early Childhood Education for the Pacific Union Conference of Seventh-day Adventists. And we're going to talk about something that we don't really like to talk about. It's the last great enemy that is going to be conquered by Jesus Christ when he comes, and that is death. And to begin it, we're going to have you share with us your latest book called The Story About Death and Dying and Hope, and it's couched in the story of your dog, Kermie. So, Christy, welcome.
Thank you.
And would you be willing to share this story with our listeners today?
Yes, I will. This was an endeavor. When I started my own personal ministry, Young Child Ministries, I thought, well, what am I going to do with Young Child Ministries? So this is one of my first endeavors. The book is called Kermie, A Story About Death, Dying, and Hope. This is Kermie. He's my dog. Mommy says Kermie is old. Mommy says Kermie is sick. Mommy says his body is not working right. Mommy says Kermie is dying. I love Kermie. I like to play with him. Mommy tells me to be careful, to be gentle, to be kind. Kermie used to eat all his food. He used to lick the bowl clean. But now, he doesn't eat all his food. Sometimes, he doesn't eat at all. He used to run and play with me. We used to go on walks. But now he's too tired. All he does is sleep. He's always very tired, and sometimes very grumpy. Mommy takes Kermie to the doctor a lot. The doctor takes good care of him. Mommy gives Kermie lots of medicine, but he doesn't like it. Sometimes he spits it out. Today, Mommy read me stories. She read me the story of J. Iris' daughter. She read me the story, the Easter story. My favorite story was the one about Lazarus. Mommy says that Kermie's body will stop working soon. She says he will die. When Kermie dies, Mommy says we will be very sad. She says we will miss our little Kermie. I think of Jairus' daughter. I think of Jesus. I think of Lazarus. I know Jesus will give Kermie a new body someday. Someday he will be well. I don't know when that day will be. I'll just have to wait and see. For now, I'll take care of Kermie. He's so sick. He's so tired. I will miss him when his body stops working. I will miss him when he dies. I know that Jesus is coming. I know he will come soon. I know he'll take us to heaven. I know he'll give Kermie a new, healthy body, and Kermie will play with me.
Amen. And you have beautiful illustrations of Kermie.
Pictures.
Yes, pictures. And in the back here of the book, you have some verses to learn, further reading, and then something that parents really need to consider, and that is, how does their young children experience grief? Many times families will go through loss, and the parents are so much into their own experience that they don't mm-hmm. realize even their infants are affected by it. Mm-hmm. So maybe we should take the rest of the time and just go through how parents can help their children through loss?
Well, sadly, people think that because children can't understand death, that they don't experience grief.
Yes.
But children have feelings, just like you and I have feelings, except they probably feel their feelings more intensely than we do because they don't deny their feelings. We as adults, we tend to deny our feelings. Or like Scarlett O'Hara said, I'll think about it tomorrow.
Yes.
And that's just not the way children are. And of course, infants and preverbal toddlers, they cannot tell you what they're feeling. And again, they don't conceptualize death and what it means.
Yes. Now, how old was your daughter when Kermy died?
She was three. And I wrote this book because she was three, and I needed a way to explain to her what was happening with our little dog. Our first dog had died, but she was only one when that happened, so she didn't remember. But this time she remembered. And this dog was sick for 2 years before he actually passed. And I didn't want to tell her that he was going to sleep, because that would scare her. I did not want to tell her that he's falling asleep in Jesus, or that he's going away from us. I didn't want to tell her any of that. I wanted to tell her the truth, but it had to be developmentally appropriate. So when I wrote this book, I was chronicling how I was dealing with this subject with my own daughter. And I used words like dying, death. I used words like his body is sick. He's tired all the time. His body is not working. He's old.
Yeah.
So that she would understand that she can understand sick because she had been sick before, but she got well. So we would talk about how, well, Kermy will get well. Well, honey, no. This time Kermy's very, very sick and his body's too old to get well. And I'll tell you, the one thing that's missing from this book is the very end of the story. Because when I finished the book, I finished the book the day he died. Some of the pictures in the book are actually from his very last moments. And so I went on and I published it. And I wish I wouldn't have. If I did a second publishing, and I probably will, I'm going to add the pictures of his burial. Because her carrying this little box of ashes, putting it in the ground, putting dirt on top of it, that's a part of closure.
Yeah.
And a lot of times people think that this book is about
a pet dog.
A pet that died. And that, you know, when your pet dies, that you're... This is a great book to use to help teach your children about what happens when your pet dies. But that's not why I wrote the book. I wrote the book to help people use words and concepts and also activities to help children understand death and dying. Not just of a pet, but of their mommy who has cancer or their grandparent or a sibling.
Yes. We're going to take a break right here. We'll be right back.
Through the AIDS pandemic in Africa, generations of parents are dying away. 15-year-old Florence has lost both his parents, as well as his cousin and best friend, to AIDS. He not only faces a challenging life with daily threats of hunger, exploitation and illness, but he also needs psychological and social support to cope with his loss and grieving.
I can't help thinking all the time that there's no solution for me, he says.
To make a donation, go to www.restoreachild.org or call 877-745-7833. That's 877-745-7833.
You've been listening to Homeschool Companion. You know, we'd love to hear from you. Be sure and like us on Facebook at Homeschool Companion or partner with us. Send us a contribution or a show suggestion at P.O. Box 413, Smithsburg, Maryland, 21783. Or call us at 301-824-3162. Welcome back. We're talking with Christine Gillen-Byrne and about a topic that we usually ignore, and that is death and dying. And unfortunately, the moment we're born, it's hanging over our heads, and young children become very afraid of it. I know that I accidentally said I'm old in front of some of my grandchildren, and they immediately equated that I was going to die. And you know, it's difficult because, yeah, someday I am going to die if Jesus doesn't come soon. And I don't want them to be overly, I don't want them to be, you know, worried about that right now, though. So,
well, they misunderstand what we say. You know, I have this running joke with my husband. Whenever he does a faux pas, I joke around and say things like, "All right, you're fired." Well, he and I think that's funny, but one day I said that, and my daughter got so upset, and she said, "Mommy, you cannot fire him. You cannot throw him in the furnace." And I looked at her, and my husband said, "Shadrach, Meshach, and Abednego." And I went, "Oh,
yes.
I'm joking around with my husband," but she totally misunderstood. Yeah. Well, the same thing happens with death and dying. Children misunderstand what we say, mm-hmm. and we have to be very careful that we're honest, that we use simple language, that we keep it brief, and that we share feelings.
Yes.
I've seen so many times where parents, or I should say adults, don't actually share their feelings with their children about what's happening.
I mean, traditionally, the first loss that children experience is usually a pet.
Typically.
Sometimes it can even be a pet bug. Mm-hmm. You know, they have this ability to attach to objects of nature such as bugs, and then they're sad when that firefly quits working and it's just there upside down in the jar.
Nature provides us with a lot of avenues to help teach children about the plan of salvation, about life, about death. And I'll give you a story briefly about my daughter. We were hiking one day, and she was the first one to see a fawn, this beautiful fawn. The doe was not far off. The fawn had gotten caught in a barbed wire fence, and it had died.
Mm.
And the mother deer was still there. So we knew that the fawn had not been dead for long.
Mm.
And it was my daughter who first saw this, you know. We had no opportunity to shield her from this harsh cruelty.
Yes.
But the first words out of her mouth were, "It won't be like this in heaven."
Mm-hmm.
And I thought, oh, praise God. Praise God I have been able to instill in her that there is something better.
Mm-hmm.
And even though bad things happen, there is hope. And that's one of the reasons in the title of this book, A Story About Death, Dying, and Hope. Because I don't want children to be left with the idea that death is permanent. Okay, so death is going to separate us.
Yes.
And sometimes for a long time. But when Jesus comes, we are going to see that loved one again.
Mm-hmm.
We're going to have that pet again. And that's another radio show we can have sometime. Give you a Bible study on whether or not pets will be in heaven.
Well, I agree with you 100%. So I have a Bible study too. And it's probably exactly the same verses and quotes from Spirit of Prophecy.
That's right. But, you know, let me briefly talk about how children respond. Because if parents are having a difficult time, whether going through a divorce or someone is terminally ill, infants and toddlers and preschoolers will pick up on that.
Yeah.
The infants and preverbal toddlers, they cannot tell you, but their behaviors will show you.
Mm-hmm.
If you're observant, you'll notice that there is anxiety in that child. And the number one way to comfort them is through your gentle touches. They need those rituals and routines. They need those strong relationships where you're holding them close. They need that physical touch, that soothing voice.
Mm-hmm.
They need to know that everything's going to be okay and that they need to feel that you're in control.
Yes.
Now, you know, you and I know that we're not in control of a terminal illness.
Yes.
But that little baby doesn't know it.
Mm-hmm.
To them, you are the one in control of the universe.
Yes.
And so you need to make sure that you're touching them.
And this is where parents often, if a child has lost a pet or if the parents are splitting up, that's another big, huge loss for children.
Very common.
That
they need to know. Well, the pitfall that I see happen over and over again is that the parents will actually loosen the boundaries.
Yes.
Because of their own guilt or whatever. And that is devastating for that child to have not only their world spinning out of control, but now the parent who was consistent about certain behaviors, mm-hmm. now they're not. And yes. so it is so devastating. And I think parents need to recognize that not only are you holding them physically tight, but you're also maintaining the boundaries that you have established for that child.
Mm-hmm. And that's exactly what my next point was, because for a toddler and a preschooler, when situations are out of control, divorce, death, sickness, when a situation is out of control in their mind, they feel like their world is out of control.
Mm-hmm.
They feel helpless. They feel powerless. They feel unable to protect themselves. And that's where you as an adult come in. And exactly what you said, keeping things consistent, keeping the boundaries. And I have to emphasize again, sharing your feelings.
Mm-hmm.
Acknowledge your feelings. Pain hurts. Grief hurts. Acknowledge it. Take hold of it. Express it appropriately and help your child do the same. People don't want to feel pain.
Yes, we avoid it at all costs, and sometimes in trying to avoid it, it causes more pain down the road.
And how. And we don't want that, because we want that child to be able to move forward, because time does heal.
Mm-hmm.
And once the divorce is completed, the death of a person, the person is buried and they're gone, and once all of that is over, time does begin to heal. But for children, it could look a little different.
And so, as we conclude the show, what words of advice can you give? There is a grieving parent listening to us right now that maybe has a toddler and they just haven't been attuned to the toddler's own grief. What words can you give them to be reassuring and then to help push them forward into a more positive experience?
I think I would just encourage that person to be honest. Just be honest. Be brief. Use simple language. Do activities that are commemorative, whether it is planting a particular plant or walking down a particular path or visiting an old neighborhood. Those are healing. Those are healing moments. If it's going to church by yourself and kneeling and praying, whatever's healing for that adult, take your child with you and let that child see how you are able to find healing in the activity that you're involved in, and involve mm-hmm. your child in that same activity. Don't exclude your child from those healing activities. They need it just as much as
yes.
you do. Whether it's getting a balloon and letting it go free, or even going to church, to a support group. There are support groups for young children who are grieving and going through any type of loss that causes emotional pain. There are support groups. And they're support groups for reasons, because your mental health professionals realize that children need this just as much as adults do.
You have been listening to Homeschool Companion, a production of MRG Media. Be sure to join us on Facebook. Just type in the name Homeschool Companion. For more on this or to contact us, go to mrgmediaministries.com. That's all one word, mrgmediaministries.com.